know, I just fell down. I blacked out, fell down. And when I woke up, it's a pool of blood on the floor. Pretty sure my nose is broken, but.
All of that occurred away from the action, and Gene Katie just a little upset with what's happened so far.
Robinson around Ostertag, over him.
Turn around, knocking it down again is Jawan Johnson, 3 for 3 from the field.
You're listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat, a part of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to season 3, episode 3 of the Purdue Basketball Beat. I guess hello and welcome is how Michael usually starts this. So
did Michael not give you guidelines on how to start this off?
No, he didn't give me. He didn't give me the memo.
Do you mind if I take a stab here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so a priest and a rabbi walk into a bar, and
no.
Okay, fine.
Well, welcome to the railroad tie-less episode of the Purdue Basketball Beat, or I guess half of the railroad tie, the original railroad tie. I am your host for this evening, Anish, or whenever you're listening to this podcast. And with me is the beautiful, the lovely Andy. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How about yourself?
I'm good. So as of right now, we're recording this on Tuesday. The Astros are currently leading 1-0, I believe. And our Indiana Fever, okay, are leading in the third quarter, 45-39. So stuff's happening, Andy. Lots of stuff is happening.
And if you're an Indianapolis sports fan, I think the Fever right now are about the only positive thing we've got going for us.
Yeah, really. Andrew Luck has torn up everything in his shoulder, apparently. Paul George, we were talking about this off the air, Paul George, generally complaining, but he's really good still at basketball.
Yeah, he is. We'll see how that works, but I'm not seeing a harmonious locker room.
Really? So I think the locker room will be fine.
A bunch of children. There are kids. There is no adult in the locker room.
Not having David West is going to hurt. Not having David West or a David West-like presence in the locker room is going
to
hurt.
But you know what? When we needed a babysitter for our kids, we were able to use the Sitter City service. And I'm just wondering if Larry Bird might just think of try to find an adult to just put in there and tell him to shut up.
Just a babysitter. Hourly. What do you, like $8 an hour, $10 an hour? I don't really know. Is that the going rate? So yeah, sure.
Yeah, you can set that. And I'm sure that, it's miserable. Rodney Stuckey, maybe? I don't even know who would,
Oh man, who do you think is the oldest player on the Pacers roster?
Oh man, I don't even know how old Mahimi is. Is it Shane Whittington?
It is not Shane. Shane Whittington's like 13 years old. He's 24.
Do you know the answer to this, or is this?
I do.
Monta Ellis?
Okay, so it could be. So Monte, Tony Douglas, George Hill, and Rodney Stuckey are all 29, and those are the elder statesmen on the team.
Are they all in the same class?
I don't think they're all in the same class. I think they were spread out.
It's crazy to think George Hill is one of the older dudes.
He's the. So Rodney Stuckey is April. They're all 86. Rodney Stuckey is April.
They are children.
So March is Tony Douglas. October is Monte. May. So Tony Douglas is our elder statesman. He is the oldest player on the team.
Man, and I can't respect him, just the fact that he spells his name T-O-N-E-Y. I don't care how good he is, but something about that bothers me. You know what? Let's transition a little bit here. I think if we go too far into this Pacers stuff, and I'm going to go in my soapbox.
So the WNBA finals, what do you think? Let's go. Let's transition. Hey, I love the WNBA, man.
Good. I couldn't even – I know the coach, and I know where to play.
The last cup, both coaches were Purdue girls. Like, both coaches were Purdue basketball, either coaches or players. So there you go.
Speaking of Purdue.
There you go.
We are just guiding this. I bet Michael's not going to want to come back when he sees how we're handling this discussion. No, probably not.
So today what we're going to do is cover the backcourt. So we figured that it was only the two of us, so we're not going to do the more exciting front court yet. We'll save that for all three of us. And we may or may not have a couple things up our sleeves this year for the podcast. So tune in, subscribe to iTunes and all that jazz.
Follow us on Twitter.
Or yeah, exactly.
You can find us on Tinder.
But today we're going to do the backcourt, and the backcourt I have defined as everybody listed as a guard on the PurdueSports.com website. So that includes PJ Thompson, Johnny Hill, Ryan Klein, Grant Weatherford, Dakota Mathias, Kendall Stevens, and Rafael Davis. And if you really want to talk about the walk-ons, we can talk about McKeeman and Toira as well.
You know, and I think we'll save that for our premium podcast for yes. paid listeners.
Subscribers, yeah. If you subscribe, like, what are we setting it at? Like $10,000 a podcast?
Yeah. Then you get okay. the 1 hour special on Toira.
Yeah, word. Toira, we'll throw in McKeeman. We'll do the other kid too. Grady Eifert is the other walk-on. We'll throw in some Grady Eifert coverage. That's what we do for our premium people. But so you can't really get a Purdue basketball discussion off without talking about the point guards, right? I mean, how many years have we talked about this? How many years have we had the starting question be, who is going to be the starting point guard? And is that starting point guard going to be the same for the entire season?
Yeah, and to be honest, this might actually be the first year that I feel a little more confident about where we have, or at least who our options are, both actual point guards and then kind of if we had to have some, a couple of people play that role. I know there have been some years before, you know, where Keaton Grant and Chris Kramer had to share some responsibilities. So, and we'll get into that, but I'm not as worried as a lot of people make it out to be, or make the issue out to be.
Why aren't you worried?
Because I think that we have enough options that we'll find something that works. I don't think any one person is going to be stellar, but I think in our motion, I think we have enough people that are capable of taking the ball up and protecting the ball, in my opinion. And I guess we can start, if you want to start, going through. Well, I guess, how do you want to handle this conversation? Because this is kind of a big topic.
Who's going to start? Who is starting in like preseason, and who's going to start for the non-conference? I mean, like, so, I think that's going to be key, because I think the starting, like, so it's not going to be key who is the starter at any position really, except for point guard, because I don't think the backup point guard is going to get a lot of minutes between all of our wing depth and the fact that we have three entrenched big men taking up two of the rotation spots. I don't think there's going to be much room for the backup point guard, right? So who do you think is going to get the starting minutes?
I mean, it would be stupid for me to come out and predict that Johnny Hill is going to come out, seeing that I've never actually seen him play. But from what I hear, I guess the data points that I do have, one, just everything you hear about him, every previous coach. I mean, he sounds like he's a hard worker. He's a great fit for the team. And I think I trust that Painter does a pretty good job, doing his due diligence and finding the right person for the system. And so I think in that regard, I think that I think that Johnny Hill, that size, he's got a lot of attributes. And granted, I've never seen him play, which is pretty important for the evaluation. But so I feel confident of him being a contributor at least. And PJ Thompson, I think PJ Thompson might start off the season as the starting point guard, just based on him being in the system longer than Johnny Hill. And I think being a point guard as a freshman is a really difficult thing. And he made a lot of mistakes and he frustrated a lot of people. But I think he's also a pretty, he's a smart player. He can shoot, which is an attribute we have not seen in a point guard in a really long time.
Keaton Grant, yeah.
And you know, he's not the most athletic, but to progress, and I believe he has, you know, added a lot of his athleticism over the summer. Then I think they people kind of roll their eyes or look at him as a huge liability, but I think that he could be, you know, for this team and for what we need, you know, a perfect role player.
I think he does get the start early in the season, but a lot of people have actually been making the Keaton Grant to Johnny Hill comparisons just because of the size. They're both around 6'3", 6'5". Actually, Keaton Grant might have been closer to 6'5", a bigger point guard. Johnny Hill is a long 6'3". He's about 190, and he can shoot, apparently, and he talks trash during the summer, so that's a man after my own heart. I don't know. I went into the summer thinking that Johnny Hill would be exclusively like the relief point guard, right? Or, you know, if PJ Thompson gets into foul trouble or if he's in just a rut, we'd bring in Johnny Hill. But the more I hear about Hill this summer, and actually I haven't heard too much about PJ Thompson, the more I hear about Hill, the more I do think that Painter is going to trust the guy with more experience, and maybe not more experience in his system, but you know, it worked. I think Painter might be riding a little high on the luck he had with John Octius last year. Right. I don't know. I wanted to say PJ Thompson, and all summer I've been saying PJ Thompson, but the closer the season gets, I think Johnny Hill might be the guy.
Yeah. I think the best approach, to be honest, is what you said. I think we should have PJ Thompson. I mean, these early games, it's not going to matter anyways, but I think he learned a lesson waiting on Octius. I think he could have, I think John Octius could have played earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. So I think that he'll probably give it a better look and see that as an option earlier. But at the same time, we struck gold. You know, I think Painter has struck gold with Octius. He did really well with Carter. So at the same time, I want to tamper my expectations and not expect to get that lucky, you know, every season with these fifth-year transfers as well. Man, so
Octius was perfect. Octius was so freaking perfect, man.
I wish he'd just come back another year. You know, play that sixth year, figure it out.
Robert Marv got it.
What's that? Sorry?
Robert Marv got the sixth year. I don't know why John Octius can't get the sixth year.
I think that we're in good hands. I think we have two what sounds like viable options. And let's face it. I mean, in this motion offense, they're not asked to score a lot. They're not asked to do a lot except just bring the ball up and move the ball around. Defense is going to be important too, being able to play the perimeter, and that's going to be difficult, or playing on the point. I think that PJ Thompson, even though he's little, he's pretty strong. And I think he has the ability to have a little bit of a kind of that Lou Jack mentality on defense as well, where he's kind of can man up the point.
Yeah, I honestly think that was one of Octius's big strengths, were the fact that his arms could span the entire width of the court, so he was really good defensively, and offensively he could attack the basket. So I think I do agree that the defensive role for the point guard is a little more important than the offense. Painter's going to want three players that can make entry passes, right? He's going to want like the three players who are playing, you know, on the perimeter. He's going to want three players who can set screens, play like make entry passes, and play defense on quick guards, because the Big Ten is going to have a lot of quick guards, and quick and very, very good guards. So it's whoever can fit that description. Johnny Hill just has the natural advantage of being older, so he's had those extra 3 years of working in a collegiate weight room, and he's got size that PJ Thompson doesn't. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting battle between those two. But I think I do agree that it might not be essential for their offensive games for what. Painter has in mind for the offense. The actual like point guard mechanics might not be that important, right?
So let's can we talk a little bit about kind of the point guard by committee option as well?
Sure. Some people are a little more for this idea than I am, but go ahead.
Well, and to me, I think the only reason why I like the idea, and it's purely selfish, but it's just to be able to fit more of these players that are going to get their minutes squeezed. We'll talk about here in a little bit, but you know, there are going to be some good players that are sitting on the bench or possibly redshirting.
Yeah.
And that's the only scenario of, you know, making it work for everybody, which actually I don't think that's really attainable, but, you know, is if some of these shooting guards could play the point guard role. And to me, this seems like an extreme. I think this is either a situational thing, you know, a couple minute spell, or if, you know, there's foul trouble, something we can use. Or the only other reason I think that we'd be using this is probably a bad situation. It would probably mean that PJ or Johnny weren't getting the job done. And, but I mean, I think there's three viable options. I know that Rafael Davis, I remember following him in AAU. And I mean, he played a few summers, you know, purely at the point guard. And I know that he has a lot of work to do to play the collegiate level, but it is something he has been working on. And then also Dakota Mathias, he's just a smart player. And when the ball's in his hands, you know, I feel confident that he's going to make the right decision. And, you know, he might not be the fastest or the, you know, the quickest, but he, you know, he's one of those people that's like, get the ball to Dakota and he will, you know, he'll be able to beat the press.
Yeah, I mean, they're both pretty low turnover guys. Davis's turnover percentage was 16.3. Mathias was 15.5. They were among the lowest on the team, who, you know, that's still pretty high for players with the ball in their hands, but that's okay. I mean, like, you can tolerate those kind of numbers, but those two, I believe, were some of the lowest. So Mathias was, let's take a look here. Actually, Mathias was at 13% of his, so 13% turnover percent. That just means a percentage of possessions that resulted in his turnover. And Ray Davis.
That number means absolutely nothing to me. I'm like, oh, yeah. 13, that's really bad.
So general number of turnovers that was his fault per 100 plays. Dakota Mathias is at 13, which was second lowest on the team. And Ray Davis was 16.3, which is fifth lowest on the team. So yeah, they generally don't make mistakes, but the lowest on the team was Kendall Stevens. Like, the two lowest were Mathias and Stevens. Yeah,
I wouldn't have guessed that because his turnovers stick out of my head more than anyone else last season.
Well, so he either would so the problem is Mathias and Stevens didn't dribble, right? That is kind of, knowing their role and looking at that number tells me that neither of them really dribbled that much or dribbled that often. They were either spot up shooters or they would do that pump fake, go in, like Stevens does that pump fake, take two dribbles in and takes that mid-range jumper. You probably remember those as turnovers because he didn't make too many of those.
Well, you know, with Stevens, I remember him, it was mostly the lazy passes on the perimeter. Oh, when he wasn't able to get it down to the post, he just didn't care anymore after that.
Yeah, that's brutal. I don't know. I see Davis as a little more realistic of an option as a point guard. And of course, even though he's technically in the front court, we have to, this is a Purdue Basketball Beat production, so we have to talk about Vince Edwards.
Here it comes.
I do think, I mean, like, honestly, he's going to be playing out of position anyway. And if the job is just to get it to the guy at the high post, Vince can get the ball to Swanigan as easily as anybody else, right? I don't know. Like, it's situational, right? Like, you might want to have more shooters on the floor. So you're going to bring in both Mathias and Stevens, Davis for defense. You could play small. You could play small with Vince at, like, point forward, like what Robbie Hummel did often for Purdue, where Lewis Jackson would kind of be mostly defensive, didn't touch the ball much like offensively, and Hummel would initiate the offense. I don't know. I those three are the ones that make sense. Also, Isaac Haas could be the point guard.
Yeah, and that's more of his natural position. So I think that Isaac would, and nobody would know how to defend that. They would just steal it from him. Yeah, let's be honest. But it would definitely catch him by surprise.
Exactly. I haven't seen anything like it. I love how Isaac Haas is a forgotten 7 foot. We don't really talk about him being a legitimate 7 foot play, giant who has some basketball skills. Because we have this other big man, he's just he's a luxury to us now.
Yeah. Let's not get too far in this conversation. We don't want to spoil the front court. Front court madness.
The front court, yeah. The insanity that's going to be, however Painter divvies up that front court rotation.
So there's actually one person we haven't talked about, and it's interesting because it sounds like Painter's bringing it up organically, but Ryan Klein is also, a candidate for someone that makes good decisions and could possibly handle the ball.
Yeah, we'll get into that in the redshirt discussion. Maybe we can have it now. But I've heard nothing but great things and surprises about Ryan Klein, just at how prepared he is to play against some of these. A play against a very experienced team. Painter has said now we don't have the young team excuse anymore. We're a very, very old team together. And Klein apparently has looked really good in the summer. And did he play point guard in high school? I don't
know. To be honest, this is kind of caught me off guard too, because I've watched a handful of Carmel games this season. And granted, he was asked to do a lot. He was more of a spot up shooter. Well, he pretty much just a shooter in general.
Shooter, yeah.
But I would never look at him as a ball handler. He wouldn't, and maybe in the conservative, like Matthias way, he's a good ball handler where he makes good decisions and doesn't turn the ball over, but sure. He's not breaking any ankles, that's for sure.
Sure. And Weatherford was a point guard as well, right? Weatherford was listed as a point guard in high school. I don't know how much actual point guarding he actually did, but
his role, he's like kind of the wild card in the whole lineup period. Cause, he's menacing looking. Dude's massive biceps.
He looks like a football player. He looks like Chris Kramer.
It's going to be so hard not to compare to Chris Kramer because it's not fair to him. But, man, it would be great to have someone on defense to come in and just punks in these point guards.
Well, so let's have that talk now. These freshmen, Klein and Weatherford, do you see them having a role? They both seem to be very backcourt players, right? They both seem to be pushing like point guard or dual combo guard roles. Neither one of them having too much of a conventional role, I would say. For Klein, Golden Black Illustrated keeps talking about how both him and his family would support a redshirt year. And I think that might have been part of the recruiting pitch as well. And that was not by Painter. That was part of the recruiting pitch that Klein and his family pitched to Coach Painter.
I should hope so, because that would be a horrible pitch. in and redshirt.
Well, that's bizarre, right? How many families of players volunteer redshirt? How many families of players would even mention
redshirt? What's crazy to me is, not to go on a tangent, but it's – such a smart approach. It amazes me at how many, the mentality of all athletes, football and basketball, is they just want to play. They want to go out there and they want to play. And it's like, you really are there are so many advantages to redshirting and having an extra year of development. And it just amazes me if that this is the first time, such a unique situation where he's comfortable with it, which I think everyone should be open to the idea if they're in that position where they really need to.
Well, the biggest thing is that you're being told you're not ready, right? And for the most fundamentally put forward message is that you're not ready to play yet, so let's wait until you're ready. And to a competitor, that might be, not exactly what you want.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. It's against you know, every you know, everything that they've you know, they're used to, or and against every instinct that they have.
And for Weatherford, we have these Painter Kramer comparisons that Painter actually made, but the biggest thing is that I don't even know if there's going to be enough minutes for Klein, let alone Weatherford. And I think we have two players who are offensive liabilities but defensive wizards already. We have Rafael Davis and we have Basil Smotherman. They're both like break in case of emergency defenders. Do we need another guy? Like, can we afford another guy who can't shoot and is just an offensive liability? Like, I don't know.
And that's what I think, that he's a great piece to have. And I think I have no expectations for him this season, and it would be cool to see him come in and play. And, but here's the question, is Weatherford a candidate for redshirting? I mean, are you automatically, and I guess the reason I ask that is do you want to use an extra year of, you know, an extra scholarship, basically, you know, for it's projecting down the road, but is there a candidate where you wouldn't want to redshirt somebody because you wouldn't want to prolong their taking a scholarship? And that sounds terrible to say, but I think that's a question.
I mean, the three people that the redshirt has like come up with, from people who know things more than we do, are Klein. Weatherford, actually, the redshirt discussion hasn't really come up, but Klein and Smotherman have actually been the most common people like that have talked about the redshirt, and we'll talk about Smotherman in the front court discussion. But for Klein, I think it makes sense. Like, we're not going to have too much space. We're not going to have too much room for him. And, you know, Painter says this every year.
Well, and to give some context to, and I'm not sure whoever is listening, you know, if you're aware of this, but with his big thing with redshirting, I think that something that haunts his dreams is not redshirting Ryan Smith.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Ryan Smith basically kind of wasted his freshman year. If you remember, I know that half, you know, on the message boards, people wanted Ryan Smith off the team. They thought that he was using a scholarship.
I mean, he was an undersized freshman. Like, Painter used the same logic to redshirt Anthony Davis, I wish we could redshirt Anthony Davis. He used this for Anthony Johnson. I think in 2011, that was his first year in the program. He was undersized. He couldn't, he was so small that he probably couldn't hold up against Big Ten players. And he was supposed to be a really good shooter, like Klein, like in the mold of Ryan Klein and Ryan Smith. So I think for Klein, it makes sense, and I would very much support it. I think he seems like the kind of guy that could follow the Ryan Smith mold and be a very useful player. A very useful role player, and can give you whatever senior leadership means. Like, he can give you that when he's, you know, entrenched in the program, be one of those Painter guys, like, on the floor. I think Ryan Smith was the most Painter guy that he's had, like him and Chris Kramer. So I think it's worth it for Klein. For Weatherford, that's a good point you bring up. Like, I don't know if it'll be worth it in, what'll it be, 2019, the 2019-2020 season. I don't know if it'll be worth it to actually have him, you know, on the taking up a scholarship.
Yeah, and I think the Klein situation is probably keeping Painter up at night right now, because, I mean, it's a high reward if you do give him that extra year. But at the same time, I think he's just making it so difficult. It sounds like he's just tearing up in practice. And, I mean, if you think about it, he is one of the best shooters in his class. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's been called the best shooter on the team. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, I mean, it almost just seems crazy having a great problem for Painter to have. But the thought of redshirting, you know, potentially the best shooter on the team, it's such a, I mean, that's makes a pretty big statement of this team, but it also makes the assumption that you know, Mathias and Kendall Stevens are healthy and, you know, will be able to carry the load on their own.
Exactly. So just to kind of put a bow tie on that, ESPN recruiting, an ESPN insider listed him as a four-star recruit. I think they were the only ones who listed him as four-star. And they said when it comes to shooting the basketball, Klein is one of the best in the country. So this is a national, you know, national report, whether you want to trust it or not, because it's ESPN recruiting. That I will leave that up to you.
Well, I mean, if they say good things about Purdue, then...
Yeah, then we can trust them. Yeah. I think he's a great shooter and we could use him. I think it'd be a waste this year, especially with the people on the team and the people that he would be behind. And especially with the center rotation and the front court rotation, basically you have three Sharpie players in the front court and one kind of Sharpie player in the back court that we'll talk about at the two guard spot. I don't think that there's any space for him, and it'd be a waste. And again, a lot of people got mad at me the last time I said this. Redshirting Ryan Klein doesn't mean I don't like him. Redshirting means he just can't contribute right now because there are too many other players. But anyway, let's move on to the two guard. Let's just see who that one spot's going to be. So if Painter is starting Biggie at the four, and is committed to Biggie at the four, which we assume that he is, means Hammond's going to be entrenched at the five. And you would assume the three spot is held down by Vince.
It has to be Vince. It has to be.
So who's the starting two guard? Right. I mean, like we've already talked about who the starting point guard is. I think we both are leaning Thompson, but wouldn't be surprised if it was Johnny Hill. That's where this discussion comes up. Like who's going to be the starting two guard?
I mean, it has to be Rafael Davis. It has to be. He's the team leader, undisputed team leader. He's done all the right things. And I mean, he's the defensive player of the year, Big Ten defensive player of the year. It would be stupid not for him not to be that starter. I mean, I don't even know why it's a question. This is a stupid question.
Let me play devil's advocate here. Who would be like, who could you, if you were Painter, who could you go to and say, we need you to come off the bench and have it not be a problem? Like who is the number one guy you could go to? And then if you have to start him later down the road, you can do it, but it's Davis. Like Davis would put up Davis would have no problem coming off the bench. He wants to win. Remember, his first 2 years were a disaster. His first year, Purdue finished in the middle of the Big Ten, I think seventh, maybe sixth or seventh. And he had no K season. And his second year, he was a disaster. I mean, like second year, he may have been one of the worst players on the team. Until later in the season, and that Purdue finished last in the Big Ten. Like this guy wants to win. And I do think he knows his shortcomings as a player. He knows he's not the most offensively gifted player and we need space around the bigs. He can come off the bench and play that backup point guard role. Or backup ball handler role, you know what I mean? And the primary defender if somebody starts to go off. But I think like out of Matthias Stevens and Davis, Davis is the one that's going to come off the bench, like volunteer to come off the bench first, right?
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're going. I mean, I see as far as the team mentality that he would be, you know, I think he would make that sacrifice or he would do whatever he's asked to do to win. But at the same time, I mean, I don't see Kendall Stevens or Matthias, you know, putting up a fight as well. But I think the biggest changer though is just Rafael's his defense. I mean, he can shut down any point guard or any wing. I mean, he'll be on any team's best player. I think there was some statistic, but he's by far the best defender in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And I think that Matt Painter, I think if it comes down, you know, that when it comes down to it, that's probably going to be the difference maker.
That's a good point. I think, yeah, like Vince is a good defender, but he can't shut people down and he's going to be asked to do a ton on the offensive end. And I don't trust either point guard yet. I have to see Hill play. Right. But I don't trust either point guards yet to actually do it. So here are two scenarios, right? Let's say we're on the side of let's start the five most talented players on the court, right? The front court is easy. Vince, Biggie, and AJ. In the back court, you're going to put Davis. I mean, like, Davis is the guy that you start. So option one is to slide Davis to point guard and rotate the hot hand shooter between Mathias and Stevens at two. Or would you rather slide Mathias to point guard and just primary ball handler and rotate just offense defense between Ray Davis and Kendall Stevens?
Man, that is a good question. Oh man. See, I honestly would love, I like option one. I would like to have Ray D, keep Ray D in the lineup and then kind of let Mathias and Stevens pick who plays. Just that's what they're there for. And let them fight for minutes. I think between the two, I mean, that would be ideal, especially if we could keep them in the rotation where they're both guaranteed, you know, at least 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, like, and I, yeah, Stevens, I think, is going to have a monster year. But, yeah, I would tend to agree. I think having Davis at the point guard, maybe not starting off the game, and maybe we'll find this out by Big Ten season and playing against some of the more talented Big Ten teams.
And see, but, and that's such a good question, too, though, because I love when, you know, it's like I want Dakota to be in the lineup more, too, though, because he's, you know, he's the smart player and he's one of those people you feel good to have that person where you can, you know, he'll get the ball where it needs to be. He can put, he's really good at getting it down to the post. And he's creative. And so at the same token, I almost trust Dakota a little more at the point as well.
Sure. That, I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. That you're going to have somebody, I told you, you're going to have a high, low post option. You're going to have players in the corner. Are you going to have one player in the far side corner and you're going to have one player setting the screen for the point guard.
And then can I make one more point though? So yeah. Kendall Stevens, you know, he's really not talked about a lot. It's hilarious. And some people kind of forget how good he is. So
he's an NBA caliber player.
He really is. And he's the fourth most of all the active players. He's got the fourth most threes right now in the Power Five conferences.
Oh, really?
137. Wow. And the first only has 140. That's Bryce Alford at UCLA.
Wow.
So, and this just stat courtesy of Boiler Ball's Instagram account. So I'm not going to claim that I dug that up myself.
There you go.
But it's just so
shout out to Chris Foreman.
Yes. Thank you, Chris. But, I mean, it just goes to show, I mean, he's putting up these massive numbers. He is like on pace to be one of the best 3-point shooters that Purdue's ever had. Yet, I mean, he's fighting for minutes. I mean, tell me, I mean, when have we ever had this type, you know, I'd say top to bottom of the roster. When have we ever had every position, you know, is someone I feel like who is capable of starting on a lot of, you know, top programs might get buried.
I did a comparison of this roster between this roster with Biggie and the 2010 roster, basically when we were third in the country. Mm-hmm. And this roster is deeper. I mean, like, there's no two ways about it. That roster was more top heavy, but when you look at it and you look at it in context, you look at what DJ Bird was at the time, you look at what Kelsey Barlow was at the time, even what Tyrone Johnson, I don't know if he was Tyrone Johnson even on that team? Yeah, I think he was on that team, but he would have been a freshman. Yeah, you look at what he was on at that time. That had a lot of names, but at the time it wasn't deep at all. That's why Robbie's injury pretty much like torpedoed any chances we had, you know, at a title. Honestly, here, I don't know what injury could sink us. Like, I don't know what, and I say this tempting the ACL gods, but like a single injury, like a single season long injury, I don't, to this team isn't going to have the kind of impact that it did in 2010, just because of how deep it is.
It would solve problems. Well, now we know who to play.
But it's a great problem, and I think I agree with you. I would rather see Davis at the point guard, and I would rather see Stevens, but I see the other side of it. Like I think Stevens could be a superstar. But that kind of takes us into question three, 4 out of 5. I don't really know where we are on time, but whatever. Where does the 3-point shooting come from? It's like an often refrain that the coaches will go into is we have a team full of good shooters who didn't shoot well last year. To me, that means you have a team of shooters who can't shoot. Like you have a team of bad shooters. But I don't know where the 3-point shooting comes into play, and the fact that that's probably the most important aspect to the success of this team. Because with Biggie at the 4 and one of the 7-foot monsters inside, we're going to need a ton of space, and 3-point shooting is going to do that. The guys that we like, Matthias PJ and Ray Davis, shot respectively. Matthias shot 32%. Davis was 30, and PJ was 28% from 3-point land. That's not good. That's not great.
No, and you know, to me, this is all like, you know, I think that people like to point to this stat, and this to me kind of shows the difference between what analysts are just looking at the box score and which ones are really paying attention, because I think that we have no problem shooting threes this season. I think nobody needs to be forced to shoot. Like, I know that Stevens has been forced to shoot in high volumes. Matthias, you know, he's shot respectably for as a freshman, and he was hurt. I mean, I think there was, and I hate to make excuses, and I hate to, but I think for this team, I guess to say that they're not good shooters, those are, you know, our shooting guards, is ridiculous. And then you add in Davis, who is not a high volume shooter. I mean, he only shot 60 attempts last season, which is high for him. And you know, roughly made what, a third of them.
Mm-hmm.
He's improving. I think he's improving his shot, and I think he's done a better job of picking his shots. And I think that if all of them kind of improve the efficiency, then you have to expect their numbers to go up.
So for reference, Kendall Stevens shot 37% his freshman year, 38% last year. Last year, I think he had 190 attempts. He's a shooter. Like there were a lot of people that were trying to tear down the year he had last year, and it was a disappointing year for what he thought. We thought last year he would have a legitimate star potential, right? And that may have been a homer thing to think. But you know, he was fighting through injuries, and we were just a little disappointed. He still shot just shy of 40% from 3-point land. I mean, that's insane. Now,
and if you think about where some of his attempts have come from too, I mean, you know, 2 or 3 feet beyond the 3-point line as well. Like he
kills those above the break, above the break 3-pointers in transition. Just like, I am so confident when he just lets those rip. Matthias, I honestly expect that 32%. I'm not as high on Matthias as a lot of other people are, but that 32% is not going to stay there. I think like he's going to be that guy standing in the corner.
Well, and he's been tearing up in practice. That was the name all summer that we've heard is Matthias is just embarrassing people.
Yeah, I'm not worried at all. And honestly, I think he doesn't take a shot inside the arc this year. Like I think he's one of those players that Nick Stauskas a couple of years ago that came out of nowhere and just was one of the most efficient players in the NCAA, not just the Big Ten. And not saying that Dakota Matthias is Nick Stauskas. Let's slow down here. But I do think that number will be around 35%. A 3% increase between freshman and sophomore year.
You know what? I think a huge variable in this too is our ability to kick it out. Because I mean and I think this is one of Haas's like his developmental opportunities is, you know, the ability when the zone collapsed to be able to find that open shooter. I think Haas had Tennessee to kind of become a black hole. And nobody could stop him, so I don't necessarily think he was making a bad decision.
Because he's the size of a black hole as well.
Yeah, yeah. But Caleb and Hammonds need to, you know, be able to recognize that and find that open spot. And I think that maybe Swanigan might be the most important element, you know, playing that kind of David West role at the top of the elbow where he can, you know, recognize, you know, either shoot or kind of recognize where the open, where the seam is.
Yeah, I think I'm not, at least with AJ and with Biggie on the floor, I'm not concerned about kicking it out to open shooters. I think those are some of the two of the best passing big men in the Big Ten. AJ turns it over a little too much. Not a little too much, a lot too much from the post, but I do think that that'll be fine. And the other player that's in this rotation that'll be like spotting up on the perimeter is Vince Edwards at 33% from the field. He was much more efficient inside the arc than he was outside. His efficient field goal percentage is 54.6. So that takes into account three pointers are worth 3 points. Free throws are worth 1, 2 pointers worth 2, right? So it just kind of weights percentages. And Vince was the most efficient player we had on the floor. You would hope that 32-33% goes up just like Matthias, because we've seen improvements that Vince has made, especially between his freshman year and last year when he had a fantastic year. And so I think shooting is going to be there. But again, this is why I'm terrified of the point guard position. Having PJ shoot under 30% from three-point land, I mean, we consider Ray Davis a bad three-point shooter, and he shot 30%, right? It's a liability. If Hill and PJ can't shoot threes, that's a liability that we can't afford. And we have players on the roster that can kind of alleviate that problem, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that was always kind of the black mark of the, Lewis Jackson-led teams is, you know, great team. And Lewis Jackson was a great point guard, but his inability, you know, defenses could collapse. And I guess Chris Kramer also, you know, these players that had to be on the court, but, you know, it really changed the way the defense had played you when they could sag off and it put a lot of pressure on everyone else. So If we could have a point guard for once that could really keep the defense honest, then we'll have a team that we've never seen before.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think next year we might have that kind of a team, right? But, or we might have that kind of a point guard, but we can talk about that in the recruiting special with Carson Edwards.
But you know what though? I mean, honestly though, I think PJ Thompson, he's a freshman and, you know, he's got a lot, he's thinking about what he's doing. I think being a freshman point guard of all positions, might be one of the biggest or most difficult transitions. Yeah. And, you know, I watched him in high school. He can shoot. I mean,
he shot well, and
you know, like you brought up Anthony Johnson earlier, we've seen really good high school shooters. We've seen their games completely destroyed. So at the same time, I got to caution myself, but, you know, I've never seen – shooting was never a deficiency. I think with some of the great high school players like Tyrone Johnson, I would not say – and Ronnie Johnson, you know, they put up a lot of points, but they weren't great shooters.
Mm-hmm.
But P.J. Thompson was a pretty good shooter.
I think Davis falls into the Johnson brother category where they were, like, unbelievable high school scorers, but they weren't necessarily shooters. And well, Davis
was just jacked. He could – he was bigger than everyone else.
Yeah, so I mean, that was – so it was Bryce unfair. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Bryson had the same thing. He would just bully his way to the basket. I don't know. Davis, see, that's the thing. We already have one slot saved for that defensive anchor who can't really, doesn't really have an offensive game. And that's unfair because Davis has actually grown exponentially, but he's still, you know, 30% ain't great, you know. It's dangerous enough that you can't sag off of them, but it's not great. And to your point, PJ was actually, like, when I looked up this number, 28.6 from 3-point from beyond the arc, that actually stunned me because I remember him hitting a ton of threes in the clutch. like when we were down three and we needed somebody and the shot clock was going down, there were only 2 minutes left to play. Like PJ would often bail us out. And I don't know. I do think.
Well, and that's got to count for something too, being able to, you know, hit the big shots.
Yeah. And, you know, that's to his credit. So I think the shooting is there. Like, I think you're right. The shooting is there, but it doesn't matter if we don't see, it doesn't matter if they're good shooters in practice, right? We need them to be good shooters in the game. I say we, like I'm on the freaking team. But Purdue Painter needs them to shoot well in the game. And I hope, and I'm counting on Mathias's field goal percentage to improve, Vince's 3-point percentage to improve. Davis, I hope so. And then Stevens, I think he'll stay.
See, but Davis, he brings so much too. You know, it's funny because, you know, having Bryson Scott, the Johnsons, the worst thing, like the thing that just frustrated everybody was all we had were a bunch of guards that tried to slash it.
Yeah.
And now that I feel like that's almost, we don't have that. I think that Edwards could do that, and I think that Ray D, that might be. That might be his best, moneymaker right there is being able to, and since they have to play tight on him on the three, that'll only help his ability to slash.
That's true. And imagine both, like imagine the seal that you can get to get an open lane with Biggie, Vince and AJ on the floor, right? Like imagine them sealing their defenders. And so nobody can rotate. And then Davis just blows by his defender. Like that would be awesome. But
you know, Painter's gonna be earning his money this season. This is for all the people I know that Painter's so polarizing, and there's plenty of people who want to point the finger one way or the other towards him. But this, you can't say that he doesn't have all the tools that he needs to have a really good team this year.
And sometimes that pressure is a lot higher, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But he's never had a roster like this, and he's going to have to, there'll be challenges. He'll have to make some difficult decisions. And this is, it's good to know that he will be, earning his money. And I think it's a good objective measurement of the type of coach he is.
Absolutely. And I also think it'll be a selling point, right? It'll be the play. He'll never get the 5-star point guards, right? But I do think that he can use this team and point to this team if successful, he can point to this team and say, like, the way the combo wings like Vince Edwards and Ray Davis, like the 4- and 5-star players like that, if he gets those two to flourish this year, especially Vince, where there's some, like, honestly, there's some like quiet like NBA whispers for Vince next year, like to go into the draft next year. And
yeah, his name is finding his way on different lists. Like
That's crazy. I mean, like, I think Sam Vecenie had him in the top 60 on his, or top 70 on his list, like on CBS Sports. I really do think that he can use this as a selling point. That's good. So let's wrap this up. Just weaknesses. So, like, weaknesses for everyone to look out for.
Way to close out in a downer.
Yeah, exactly. But then we'll do who's your breakout candidate from the backcourt. So what are you looking to improve? So we'll start with PJ. What do you want him to improve up on from last year? And do you think he'll break out this year?
I mean, he's pretty short for one. So
eat his vegetable. Drink his milk.
No, I think scoring and then just decision making. I think that he folded under the pressure of the big moments. What game was that? Was it Iowa, maybe? No, Illinois. How could I forget? Where he almost single-handedly lost the game for us. So I think he's going to come back a lot more mature, but I'd like to see him play, play more with more confidence and overall more mature player.
I think, shooting just generally is a big thing. And honestly, unfortunately, I think I see him getting buried a little bit. I think that will come back next year. And maybe his ideal role is like either the 50-50 point guard splitting time with someone like Carson Edwards, who's coming in next year, or you know, being the true backup point guard for like a conventional backup point guard. But this year, I think there's too much depth and he's got a lot of room to grow. And I think he does. And I think he makes those strides. But you remember, he was a late addition. He was a super late addition. I think he committed around the same time as Biggie did. Like, you know, Biggie did this year. He committed last year, unless I'm remembering that wrong. I think he was a late spring commit, or maybe even into the summer.
But he wasn't. I mean, Painter was watching him for a long time. That's the one thing you have to remember. And I guess another, like, I guess he could be held accountable too, is that Painter did his due diligence. I mean, he had three years of being able to watch him and not feeling pressured to have to offer him to get him.
Yeah, that's very true. And then with Hill, like, we don't really know him, but all we need to see
we'll make something up.
Exactly. We need to see, I don't know.
He's improved really confidence, exactly. You know. And
what are those what are buzzwords talking heads use? Let's channel our inner Stephen A. Smith.
I think this podcast might get pulled out of the
Is it continuity? I mean, like, just trying to get on the same page, seeing how quickly he gets on the same page as everybody else, and looking at his defense. It'd be nice if he was a good defender. But again, I think he gets buried. I think just that point guard spot gets buried. And it's like you said, I like that point guard by committee. Going into somebody who people think should play point guard, and I think they're wrong. Dakota Mathias, what's his weakness that you'd like to see him improve on?
I just would like to see him be healthy for a full season. And I think a lot of his injuries were kind of is the same nagging injury that he was never really able to overcome. That happened at the end of high school.
Mm-hmm.
But
was that ankle or was that wrist?
It was ankle, and then he had vertigo. Typical case of vertigo.
I'm always confused by people who say that vertigo, or like athletes who say vertigo is a problem. Like, does that mean they've got an inner ear problem, or like, are they afraid of how tall they are?
You know, I have no idea what that even means. It just sounds kind of scary. No idea. Probably the latter.
He can't ride roller coasters.
No, but I think that he, you know, I think along with the typical kind of being a sophomore and having that additional confidence, but I think just being healthy, I think we have not yet seen what he really can offer the team. So I think that's kind of an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, and maybe that was sort of why his inconsistencies rose, was that he was just nagging injuries. Yeah, like I'm not high on Mathias, but the opportunity is there this year. We need shooters, right? And above everything else, he's a dead-eye shooter. He's at least supposed to be a dead-eye shooter, right? So I'd love to see some kind of consistency out of him, and just the ability to share minutes at the two, just like a constant rotation at the two guard spot. Moving on, the other guy, Kendall Stevens. Do you see Mathias breaking out this year? Like, is Mathias your breakout guy from the backcourt?
Man, I hate this question because I feel like you know, maybe it's just my like homerness of getting excited about every player in the preseason, and you know, Patrick Beatty is going to be awesome this year. But I think only because I think we didn't get to see his true value. And from what it sounds like, he's been working his ass off. Am I allowed to say that? I am. Yeah. Over the summer. So I think that his, you know, with additional confidence, I think that he will be a completely different player.
And then Kendall Stevens, my breakout candidate. He shot 26% inside the arc. 26% on two-pointers. That's got to improve to me. I don't think that goes down, or I don't think that stays at 26. I think that was a rut that he was in. He had that disgusting dislocated finger that I think bothered him all year. He had an ankle. That was a thing. Like, again, along with Mathias, Steve, and maybe that's why we didn't see a lot of three-point shooting on the team, but health again for Kendall Stevens is what I'd like to see. But I really do think, like, I think he could shoot 40% from three and, like, he just be this lights out, like, the best shooter in the Big Ten. Like, I really do. Like, and he'll pop up on NBA boards for 2018 or 17.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that ideal size, and he is kind of a hit, like, in that – kind of buried on the roster in a way. I mean, he is like a hidden gem that people don't even know how good he really is.
I mean, if he has a great year, I think that will be like the biggest indicator of whether Purdue will have a successful year or not. Like, I really do think it kind of hinges on Kendall Stevens. Like, if he's great,
three points are like worth more than like regular 2 points. So that totally makes sense. No, but I agree. I think that, you know.
Hot take, Andy.
I'm so good at analyzing stuff. No, I think that, you know, adding different elements to his game, I think, like you said, if he could, you know, drive it, and you know, I think he's put on a little bit of weight, it looks like, at least he's carrying more weight on his shoulders. If he, you know, if he's added some athleticism, so it would be nice to see him take it to the hole a little bit and with some authority.
I think that was a good phrase. That was a good sports phrase you used there.
But to be honest, though, like, he is the one player, and I've thought of this since a freshman year, and I know that a lot of people don't feel that way. I would let him shoot it with anyone on him.
Yes.
If three people are on him, just shoot it. Just give him the ball and let him shoot it. I think there was his freshman year, he was the only person that I cared, like, wanted to shoot the ball. And
he has the ultimate green light. He has Painter's ultimate green light. I don't think I've seen a green light like this other than Etuan Moore under Coach Painter. He's 193 pointers. And how many of those were garbage three pointers that he took with like two people in his face? And he made 40% of his threes, you know, just under 40% of his threes. Like, that's insane. I want him shooting anytime he feels even remotely comfortable, but I want him not hesitating to shoot. Like, that's when he starts missing, as if he like thinks he's too good. Just let it go. I think he averages double digits this year, and I double digit points this year. I do think he breaks out. And then our last guy in the backcourt, Ray Davis, everybody's favorite Ray Davis. Has there, before we get to his weaknesses, because we know shooting is going to come up in this thing, have we, like, I count on one hand, in the Painter era, the better senior leaders that we've had, like the better senior captains that we've had.
Oh man, I completely agree, and I think it's hard.
There are two, right? There's Chris Kramer and there's Robbie Hummel, and that's it. That's where the list ends.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed we never got to see how Ronnie Johnson would have been as a senior, but. No,
he's such a good example.
You know, and he came in, I think people didn't realize how like smart he was. I mean, he's a 4.0 student, and he's, you know, worked his butt off. So by example, you know, players get to see kind of how you can transform your game. You know, just with between really for his sophomore and junior season, it was night and day. But also he's really, really, he's wise beyond his years, really mature. He's 40, so kind of, I guess it kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah. I was going to say wise beyond his years, and he's 40 years old. My God. He's always been one of my favorites.
Although I do think that Vince Edwards is gonna kind of cut from the same cloth. So,
Do you think he's captain? Like, do you think he gets
Vince?
Yeah.
I think that he's got the maturity and the mindset to be captain. Now, whether or not, I mean, there's probably other good candidates, so.
I mean, like, it's definitely.
He could be the de facto candidate.
Yeah, or the locker room. He's the loudest in the locker room, probably. But I think Ray, I don't know. I actually honestly would think that he's been a better leader than Hummel, and that's not praise given lightly, right?
And Chris Kramer, he was a leader by action, by energy, but I don't have a lot to go by that says that he was the best leader, you know, outside off the court and in the locker room. I think he was a pretty quiet guy.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And I think Rayfield Davis is like the ideal. I mean, he engages the team. He kind of, I know that he's, I think I remember hearing that he was yelling at Vince Edwards for like skipping a class or not studying or something like that. But he gets on guys, and that's kind of who you want to see, you know, you want as your leaders. You want,
he's the team dad.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Ray Davis. I love AJ too. I mean, like, our seniors are incredible. Like,
it's nice to feel good about the team, like top to bottom. Like, you know, there's just been a couple of years where it's like, man, there's been some character issues, or you had to kind of wince. But this is, I really like this roster from a character perspective.
That's right. And, you know, Ray Davis, somebody like Ray Davis or somebody like Dakota Mathias, like, seem like extras. That Isaac Haas, like, that could be our bench, right? But yeah, Davis, from an improvement standpoint, ball handling, if he's going to be a primary point guard, and shooting corner threes, really, as long as if he can hit 33% of his corner threes, I think that gives, like, it, you know, at all of these points, if we have three shooters that shoot over 33%, like shoot over a third of their threes go in, I think that gives plenty of room for the bigs to work inside. And they're all good passers. Davis, I think, is smart enough to be a good passer, to the inside or to the elbow. Mathias, we know, is a great passer. Stevens has really got to improve that. But yeah, for Davis, just be a better shooter. I don't know how much more we can ask of him. He's already, already team dad, right? So he's already taking on all, and I'm sure after bad games, he's going to take all the blame, you know, like he's going to be that guy this year. And I don't know. I'm super excited. Like, this is going to be fun. This is going to be really fun. And I'm gonna miss Ray Davis. I'm already sad that this is the last year you're gonna watch him.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I don't think there's gonna be a vacuum necessarily, a leadership vacuum, but I think that it's gonna be tough. I mean, you're just gonna lose a big personality, and he just kind of encompasses. He's always encompassed everything that Purdue prides himself in. You know, when he had a hard time finding that role as a freshman and sophomore, you know, he knew he played hard and, you know, died for loose balls. He still kind of was a difference maker just by putting his body on the line and by doing the dirty things that don't show up in the box score. And that, you know, that becomes, that's like the best way to win, Purdue fans' hearts, is to be that guy.
to be Brian Cardinal.
The Brian Cardinal strategy.
And the thing is with Davis, he's, the best leaders have been, every, you know, the best owners of a restaurant have worked every single job in that kitchen, right? Davis has been he's been the go-to guy. He's been the captain. He's also been the last guy off the bench, one of the worst players on the team.
That was, just for the record, that was your quote, that he was the worst guy on the team.
I don't think he would. I think his sophomore year, he was an awful player. Like, I think, and not an awful play, he had an awful year. Like, I really do think that he was one of the players that hurt the team the most, just on the court. Because off the court, he was still Ray Davis. He was still working his ass off. He was still doing everything in practice. It just didn't come through on the court his sophomore year. We finished last. Everything was pretty much terrible. I do think that he was a guy that kind of fell out of the rotation. Right. And if you fall out of Painter's rotation, it's hard to get back. And now he's captain. So I do think he's kind of played every role, and that kind of makes for the best captain. And I'm glad at least one person can get in AJ's face if things aren't going well and say, you're the guy, like, take us to the end. Right. So it's going to be fun. I'm glad we have Ray Davis.
Absolutely.
All right. So I think we did it. I think that was the backcourt. We have settled nothing, and we've talked for a good 45 minutes. The Fever lost, so there was that. There's that whole thing. And I think it's still 1-0. I don't really know. 2-0 to the Astros, so we'll see.
And
we'll
the Pacers, see Pacers pull it off. And
Pacers did
Paul
pull.
Paul George put down 32.
Oh, God, man.
He's probably still complaining to the media right now, but point that out.
Well, we will see you next week. We'll be trying to do one of these a week, whether it's football or basketball or an interview or something like that. We'll be doing something. We think it's going to be an exciting season. So at least having something to listen to in your car or on your commute to work or at work, maybe, I don't know. We think that we're going to try to get that out. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.